Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yes, it's the answer to oil dependence and dirty coal, a cure for the economic ills of upstate New York. Or it's environmental devastation, and we have to stay away from it. If you've guessed, I'm talking about hydraulic fracturing, the controversial method of extracting natural gas from shale deposits like the Marcellus Shale Formation in New York and Pennsylvania, then you've been paying attention. So has my next guest. Tom Wilbur started reporting on this years ago when he worked for a Gannett newspaper in central New York. He's focused on it full-time since 2010, and now he's here to talk about his resulting book, Under the Surface, Fracking, Fortunes, and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale. Tom Wilbur, thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
And to start off with a little understanding of where you're coming from, I understand that you describe your position as not pro or anti-drilling, but as pro-transparency. Why frame it that way?
Well, I get asked this question a lot, and there's a lot of skepticism about the media these days. And I just want to put it right up front that I'm an old-school journalist. I follow the ideals of Joseph Pulitzer, which is to essentially look at concentrations of wealth and power very skeptically. And I'd just like to get that on the table right up front because there's this issue of fairness that we hear all the time about. This is so polarizing, and are you being fair to one side or the other? So I don't have a formal position on the hydraulic fracturing, the merits or the risks, but I do have a position about transparency, and I think that has been an overriding issue with this whole issue.
How so? Has it been hard to learn the truth, hard to learn the facts?
Well, yes, it has for many reasons, but I think the oil and gas industry throughout history has operated from a different set of standards and rules than a lot of other industries. And I think really we hear a lot about the current exemptions that the industry has. Actually, it's been exempt from a lot of regulatory and reporting requirements throughout history, federal and state. And the two, of course, that often are talked about are the Halliburton loophole, which is the federal exemption from the Clean Drinking Water Act in the 2005 energy bill. And then also hazardous materials handling regulations, both federal and state. So they really don't have the same reporting standards that a lot of other industries have.
So the natural gas industry, I mean, the natural gas itself has always been there, but the technology for extracting it was developed out west, if people don't know the background on fracking. And then it was applied in Pennsylvania, where there was a mini gold rush of sorts, and it's on the horizon in New York. Land is leased, but both sides are holding each other at bay for the moment. How does the town of Dimock, Pennsylvania, as a cautionary tale, fit into your story?
Well, I think Dimock is iconic of a lot of the issues nationally that we're now hearing about shale gas, and the transparency begins with the transparency. There's a lot of people that expected one thing in Dimock. They leased their land cheap in the beginning of the Marcellus shale rush, and they were optimistic that they would gain jobs to the community, they would gain royalties, they would gain lease payments. And they liked the idea of producing domestic energy. And for some of those people, that's just turned out they're disillusioned by this. And the story really talks about how the events in Dimock, the expectations in Dimock, affected the debate nationally. And I'll just add that in New York State, we're not really a traditional mineral extraction state like in Pennsylvania. So the comparisons between what we have going on in Pennsylvania and what we have going on in New York State are very telling. The Marcellus, the prime part of the Marcellus Shale, underlies both these states. So you have the same mineral resource under both the states, but you have very political, very different political cultures, which are shaping the nationally.
Talk a bit about the two scientists this is one of the most interesting parts of your book, I think, who started at the same point but ended up being diametrically opposed in their conclusions about fracking, both the environmental safety of it, public health safety of it, and the economic and energy implications.
Yeah, so you have Tony Ingraffia from Cornell University. He's an engineer that studies fracking or fracturing mechanics, and he has worked with the industry and for the industry for decades. And, of course, the industry is long interested in the technicality of how rock can be fractured, and that's Dr. Ingraffia's specialty. And then you have Terry Engelder, a geologist in Penn State, that has also worked with the industry for decades. And often Tony and Terry have worked together on various projects. This is prior to the high-volume hydraulic fracturing debate and the whole shale gas debate. This was more on the conventional wells. As the debate came about the role of high-volume hydraulic fracturing in the nation's energy future, Tony and Terry essentially began taking opposite sides. And after Josh Fox's movie came out in 2010 and really put this on the map and everybody started paying attention.
That was the movie Gasland that saw the tap water catching fire and things like that.
Yeah, and that was very important in raising the awareness of this nationally. And everybody began to see that this was more than just a local issue in one drilling area or another drilling area, but because the shale gas reserves are so big, it affects a lot of people. So, I guess we'll start with Terry, was one of the first to recognize the value of the Marcellus Shale commercially. And he did a lot of work quantifying the amount of gas that was in the rock. And he has built his career essentially on shale gas exploration. So this was a very important thing. And he gained a lot of fame in the media by saying that there's 500 trillion cubic feet of natural gas in the Marcellus, which would supply the country for decades. Tony, at the same time, when the concerns about the flaming tap water and all the other issues associated with fracking came, Tony took the opposite position, and he essentially has decided that shale gas development and fracking, even if it can be done, quote-unquote, safely, is a bad idea because, essentially, we're going down the carbon path. We're contributing to global warming, and he has participated in a study, contributed to a study that shows that shale gas development really is no better than coal. And both Tony and Terry have talked extensively about this publicly, and it's interesting that they're on opposite sides, but they both have a history with the industry.
So how does their difference of opinion as, you know, two scientists who've been looking into the implications of fracking. How does that affect your process as a journalist trying to report out an objective book? Because journalists rely on scientists for unbiased, data-driven analyses. So what has the fact that science can be divided meant for how you cover this issue?
Well, I think that's a very important point. It actually helps cover the issue because I like to say that policy really is where science meets politics. And we know that science can be, is a matter, of, when it comes down to it, of interpretation. And yes, it's data-driven, but what does the data mean and who's doing the interpretation? So you have a lot of very bright people now looking at this from all sides, and I think the fact that you have people like Tony and Terry on opposite sides of it helps explore the issues.
Has either scientist convinced you more than the other?
I think in terms of getting back to this transparency issue, I think Tony's voice is very important here because it's a credible voice. I mean, it's easy to dismiss people who might come at this, well, they don't want a shale rig in their backyard, or they don't want the traffic associated with it, or they don't want the inconveniences or the aesthetic problems associated with shale gas, is not in my backyard. And the industry, of course, will do that. But when you have somebody with the credibility like Tony Ingraffia coming, I think it really helps us take a look from an insider's perspective on all the potential hazards with this. I think that's important to get on the table.
My guest is journalist Tom Wilbur. He's investigating the fracking controversy and has a new book, Under the Surface, Fracking, Fortunes, and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale. So remind us where things stand now in New York State in terms of whether this is going to go forward here. Maybe we should start with the three men in the room, the governor and the two legislative leaders who get to make most of the decisions for the state. Where does the governor stand?
Well, the governor has, since he took office, been for pushing the supplemental generic environmental impact statement along, and of course we know that's abbreviated the ESGEIS, and it is the environmental review that essentially will allow the DEC to permit shale gas wells. That review was just a little bit of background that came about in 2008 amid a lot of concerns about whether the state was able to effectively oversee this industry, especially in New York State, because there hasn't been a lot of mineral extraction in New York State. So when Governor Cuomo took office, he was very much of, let's get this going and let's get the DEC's review done, and we'll take it from there. Since then, he hasn't been pushing so hard, and there's been one delay after the other, and now it looks perhaps that this won't come out before the end of the year.
And one interesting aspect of this to me is that the courts will have a lot to say because of the issue of home rule, which we're used to hearing to explain why New York City can't pass its own rent laws or something like that without the state getting involved. But here cities and towns have the opportunity, or they don't, to make their own very hyper-local decisions about fracking, right? And from what I gather, the companies need access to contiguous land, a lot of land that's connected. So if some of these small communities decide, not in my backyard, then are the fracking companies going to decide they can't go ahead with this at all in New York?
Yes, that's a great point. The role of home rule is critical. And a lot of that depends on the price of natural gas, to answer your question about whether home rule would prevent companies from doing this in New York. As the price of natural gas goes up, of course, the incentive goes up, and companies find a way, one way or the other. But just to elaborate a little bit on home rule and why that's so important, the state right now, under the law of the land, is the regulator of shale gas. So they are the ones that the state regulators permit it. They grant the permits. And local municipalities have no say in where shale gas goes, a shale gas well goes. So and I talked before about the supplemental generic environmental impact statement. It's a mouthful. But if your listeners can take one thing away from that mouthful of words, it's the word generic, because the state right now generically permits get wells without really consideration to the political dispositions or the environmental dispositions or other factors of a given municipality. So as you point out, this has been challenged in the courts. The town of Dryden is saying, wait a minute, we can ban this if we want, because it's not really compatible with our land use here. And that's being challenged. So if municipalities like Dryden or Middlefield or other ones in upstate New York, right over the drilling fairway, start opting out, and they can do that, it does break up this big contiguous area that the industry needs to develop all the shale gas wells, tie them all together. And it is a disincentive then for drilling in New York State. With the markets are so important, Brian, because right now we have a very low price of natural gas. So we are not seeing the big political push and the big political urgency to get this through. But if the price of natural gas goes back up to what it was in 2008, you're going to see a lot more pushing a lot more expediency to this issue.
The price question is so interesting to me because as we see the bottom drop out of natural gas prices, that says to the public, I think, on the one hand, look, this is so cheap compared to oil and coal. This really is a great opportunity for more energy independence in the United States. And at the same time, it says to the drilling companies, well, maybe there's not the profit in this that we thought there was.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Having low prices actually is a way to open up new markets. I think the drilling companies, though, are looking at this over the span of a decade. I don't think they are used to dealing with volatile prices in the natural gas industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking is now that with this type of reserve, not just the Marcellus and the Utica shale in New York State and Pennsylvania, but with other shale gas reserves now accessible through through fracking, that we will have a big, stable supply. It'll stabilize supply over the long haul. Therefore, so your markets, can we run automobiles on natural gas? Well, in the past, if the supply isn't there or it's not stable, you're not going to have the incentive to switch over to run automobiles. Same thing apply with other markets. But now we're seeing a big, stable supply. You're seeing coal-fired power plants switching over. You're seeing talk in Congress of the possibility of incentives for natural gas-powered cars. So, yes, the price and the supply issues are very big for the long-term planning of all this. And again, on the long-term planning, I think it's very important we get caught up in the this year or this month or where's the legislature at or where's the governor at in passing this. And I think you got to remember that shale gas development is something that takes place over decades. And it's very important to think about the legacy of the next generation as this plays out. And also, it brings us to the issue of, okay, are these cement casings or these other technicalities for drilling and cementing and securing the wells, they might be safe here and now, but what about two, three, four decades from now? What will the legacy be?
And there we leave it with a deep look into the fracking debate from journalist Tom Wilbur. His new book, Under the Surface, Fracking, Fortunes, and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale. Thank you for all the background.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, another hour to come.